Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. A little bit different episode today. Taking a page out of the notebook of Ethan Strauss, the audio notebook, I guess. He is a podcaster, a journalist turned podcaster. He used to write for on the NBA's Golden State Warriors. I believe he has at least one book out, and I recently subscribed to his podcast and his Substack or whatever it is, one of these subscription services. And he sometimes will do audio versions. He does regular podcast interviews like I do, but sometimes he'll do audio versions of some of the things that he writes. And I wanted to try to give that a try this week because it's All In Weekend. And I did a full preview of the show for SportsIllustrated.com as part of our partnership relationship there. And I wanted to kind of try that this time around and also give some perspective and kind of add some things between the lines, I guess, and so on and so forth. So I want to talk about that again. Big, big content weekend for the pro wrestling industry. And yeah, with All In coming up, I wanted to give that a shot and also give a couple thoughts as I record in this Friday afternoon about Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk. Obviously, you've heard a lot about those two gentlemen in the, I'm sure by the time you listen to this, you've read a lot. By the time this comes out, WrestlingObserver.com, Wrestling Observer Radio should be out with Brian and Dave talking more about the very surprised Bray Wyatt situation. You know, I don't have, it's always good to lead off the podcast saying I don't have a lot to add. I don't really have a lot of like insight to add to either passing. With Terry Funk, he's just a cool guy, you know? He was somebody that you could see, he had all these different eras, and I can understand maybe younger fans not really kind of getting the gist of just how unique a personality was. You know, they may have seen him during the Attitude Era run in WWE. But, you know, I remember, I can't remember, you know, kind of when I first started seeing him, but I think it probably was, you know, in hearing about, you know, the WCW days with obviously the Ric Flair feud in the late 80s. I'm 45, so I've seen, you know, a lot, you know, kind of the different eras and so on and so forth. But, you know, I remember him on, you know, watching him on the Coliseum video, the famed Hulk Hogan match from Saturday Night Main Event, as well as some other matches during his WWF run. Obviously, the NWA run or WCW run I was just mentioning. And I think prominently his ECW run, which was, again, the middle aged and crazy and just doing all these wild things. And I was such an ECW fan. And having him be a part of that was really kind of cool. So that's maybe where I really kind of glommed onto him and he really kind of started trying to understand a little bit more about him, you know, reading about reading wrestling magazines and so on and so forth. And then, you know, obviously he had his Attitude Era run, as I mentioned, and did some stuff with MLW. But he just seemed like a very cool, he didn't seem like he was, just a cool, unique character. He had obviously done some interviews with Dave and Brian over the years, but just a, you know, it's a, he'll be missed, but it wasn't a sadness when you hear him pass. It was more just a celebration of everything that he did. And he knew he was in bad health for a long time. And yeah, it just felt like a real celebration over the past couple of days, which led to, of course, the flip side of that, which is just, you know, in this business, you know, you get these surprise announcements and they just kind of hit you out of nowhere. The sadness that was the passing of Bray Wyatt. And Bray obviously was a very unique character. I think a very maligned character during his run. It's cool to see that he is so favorably thought of by so many fans, coworkers, you know, all these type of things that he's done. And obviously was a great guy. That seems to be the consistent thing, which is cool to see. Very similar when, you know, Brody Lee passed away. But obviously, you know, there's a sadness, you know, it reminds me of when Jay Briscoe passed away earlier this year, which feels like 20 years ago at this point. But just kind of this feeling of just sadness and the feeling of not being fair, right? And that's what happens. These things happen to, quote unquote, normal people every day, and tragedies befall stars as well. And that's what happened in this case. Obviously, he had, you know, big family and, you know, all these things, you just don't really, you know, expect these things. But with Bray, you know, some of the things that I remember, the thing that stands out to me most, it feels like it was, I not fully realized. And I say that because there was always, I remember hearing about him in NXT And there was so much excitement about when he was going to get called up to the main roster. I remember Chris Jericho specifically talking about how this guy was going to be the next real, real big thing. And he came, I think he did as well as he could have, but I don't think it was all his problem in that. And I say that because obviously with, you know, the Vince McMahon factor of booking and some of the things he would allow to do and not allow to do, I don't think we ever got the fully realized Bray Wyatt. We might have, but I think there were so many things that maybe could have been different or just even enhance his character even more and got him over to that level that a guy like Jericho thought. He certainly had a memorable run, but there were so many times where I wanted kind of more of the backstory, and I don't think WWE is really that interested in doing it. So he was seen and talked about so often as a creative and a visionary. He's a very unique character. I mean, there's no doubt about that from the look. The fact he was a stereotypical, prototypical, big guy wrestler in so many ways with the Husky Harris character in the early days of the kind of first version of NXT. And then to where he became, it was a fascinating journey along the way, and someone that just really kind of put in the work and wanted to do things a little bit differently. Some worked, some didn't, but that's what happens with creative people. The Fiend debut, that character, that was, I was kind of like out on WWE at that point, and I remember watching that, and I just felt like, oh, this is something really special, the match against Finn Balor. And basically, it was a squash match, which it should have been. Finn got, I think, a little bit more offense than he should have. But it was just a moment of just this, what are we seeing now? And it just felt so fresh and real. And then, of course, WB, they just made it too much. It wasn't an every week character. It was a very much an Undertaker type, like not every week, but, slow play it and make it special. And I think they kind of took away from that over time. Again, just not the fully realized thing. Just make it be unique. Make it be something that is an event when you see him. And obviously it was an event when he returned. And, it was kind of after he got cut the first time. There was that talk about, if he was going to go to AEW. I have no idea if that ever really took place. But it was just even those talks took place. But it was just a sadness of just this, we hadn't seen, we saw it, but I didn't think we fully saw all of it. And, just that for the impact that he had, for the limitations that he had, he made an impact. And I think people that will think about him and he's an unforgettable character. And if you think about all the wrestlers that have come along over the decades and decades and decades of this business, there's so many that are forgettable. Or you may remember the name, but you don't remember that much about them. With Bray, I think you're always going to remember all these different unique points and be able to talk about them and for good and bad. And I'm looking forward to going back and maybe seeing some of the matches that he had that I forgot about through the years, some of the good stuff and the Wyatt family thing and that whole thing. That was a fun run with Bryan Danielson and it was there's just a lot there. And very sorry that he passed away. Sad thing. Sad for his family, and obviously sad for the wrestling community as well. His fans. You see him on Twitter. They were very Fiend fans were out there en masse for sure throughout the years, and I'm sure they're hurting today. So very sorry to hear that. Obviously sorry to hear about the passing of Terry Funk. But you could not have two different personalities when it came to presentation and all that. But it's sometimes these things happen in bunches, and hopefully there's no other passings coming anytime soon. But RIP to Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt. So let's get into a little bit of AEW All In. You can find this article in full, this column, on SI.com in their pro wrestling section. We'll also retweet it, and I'll retweet it on my Twitter as well. But so here's kind of from the start. So there's plenty that's been said about AEW's All In coming in from London's Wembley Stadium, but one fact that can't be disputed, the event is already a major success for the young company. To go from non-existent to packing a major stadium with more than 80,000 fans in less than 5 years, it's pretty incredible. And I think it's a feat that's underappreciated given the amount of non-WWE wrestling promotions that haven't been able to pull off a similar feat despite decades of existence. Even before a single pay-per-view is bought or a single t-shirt sold for All In, AEW will have generated $10 million or more in revenue on ticket sales alone. That is tremendous. Don't let anyone tell you that it's not. Don't let the WWE, pro WWE crowd or anti AEW crowd tell you anything. This is a tremendous success, even if they were number three all time on the attendance list or all this. I mean, that is a tremendous one night number. And even if it's not number one, that's okay. It's still pretty good. Plenty of promotions would kill for those numbers. There remain all in detractors in the wrestling community, however, putting aside the anti-AEW crowd on social media. There's been plenty of grumbling about the card itself from the pro-AEW crowd. You know you've heard this. For how long the card came together and the actual lineup itself. Part of the reason for the lineup, if you listen to AEW head Tony Khan, is due to injuries that took Bryan Danielson and two locals, Jamie Hayter and Pac, out of high-profile opportunities. In Hayter and Pac's cases, it must be crushing for them to not be able to perform in front of their home fans. That is, I think, 100% the case. I can't imagine just the gut punch it is that they can't actually work this show. Must be awful, awful feeling. On a media call this past week, Khan also alluded to factors outside of pro wrestling that caused him to make changes to the card. Khan did not go into details, promising to talk about the issues after the show, adding another level of behind-the-scenes intrigue. AEW isn't there always. The main complaints about the card is that the matches don't seem big enough for this level of event. But since there will be a WrestleMania-level crowd, the expectation is a WrestleMania-level show in terms of match importance and the culmination of storylines paying off and chapters ending. Except there's a reason why this Sunday can't be that. If I could have bolded this and put it in 12,000-point font, I would have in this article. 7 days after All In, my friends, AEW will hold its annual Labor Day pay-per-view. You know it, All Out. From Chicago's United Center. This will be the first time, being this weekend and next weekend, this will be the first time this company has run back-to-back weekends on pay-per-view, and it's still unclear as to why. For better or worse, Khan is handcuffed to tradition, especially with specific shows in specific cities on specific holidays, which is why All Out stayed put. Perhaps one day we'll learn All In was targeted for a streaming service like Max or Broadcast TV, or if the plan was to run two straight weekends of pay-per-views all along. That seems unlikely. I think that is a primary reason. And I typed this question in during the media call on Tuesday. It did not get answered whether it was the plan all along to run back-to-back pay-per-view weekends. I don't think it was, because I think if you think about it, does that make sense? Especially if you're not doing a bundle. And I didn't even mention the bundle in this column, but I think in so many ways that it's a big risk for them. But I think they are very happy with that core audience that they have, and that they figure, okay, these guys are going to buy no matter what, two straight weekends. We're going to find out. And I think these two shows are going to be so linked together. I think we're going to find that in the actual layout. But I think my assumption is that this date with Wembley, this was the only date that was available, and that they said, well, we have to stay on Labor Day weekend for All Out. I don't understand why. You could have run it later in the month. Could have made an adjustment maybe for the stadium show, the Queen Stadium show. You could have, you know, changed things up a little bit. You could have perhaps made that a Sunday show instead. You know, maybe that was it. I'm thinking that why did All Out have to be on Labor Day weekend this year? Just bring it back next year if you want to. So I think because of that, there's a reluctance to have to really load up All In to the show that I think so many expected. And I think that there, because of that, I think he wanted to keep some stuff for All Out, which we're going to see, assuming that fans are going to buy both shows and they're going to not feel, I'll say ripped off and not feel that specialness. To me, I think as I get to in the rest of this column, you're looking at 80,000 people. I think you go All Out, balls to the wall, let's do it. And you have the best card possible and not worry about All Out. So I think that was kind of a big reason. Having said all that, the in-ring action will be great as always, and results will undoubtedly link directly to All Out, likely in form of a big rematch, which is where we begin our story. Long pause for a sip of coffee. So we start with the first match, AEW World Champion MJF defending against Adam Cole. Khan feels this is the best story AEW has ever told on TV, and I'm inclined to agree. The reason, sorry, WWE haters, is because this whole story is a WWE-esque presentation. Excuse me. The rivals turned partners angle has been done to death in wrestling history. But usually it's a paint-by-numbers execution with little variance. With MJF and Cole, AEW resisted the easy move to split the two before All In, and instead made them the perhaps best of friends with some wacky skits and entertaining tag team matches along the way as they unsuccessfully made a run to win the AEW tag team titles. This run has truly crowned MJF as a major player in the business and one that could easily transition to WWE if the bidding war of 2024 is to be believed. He needed this, and so did AEW. I think that's another bold point for me. This run, this angle with MJF, I think he definitely, before it was like, you know, would he fit into WWE? I think there's the assumption he would, but it's kind of we'd kind of need to see it in kind of these wacky type of deals. This proved it. He can go anywhere he wants to either big company and truly be a major player. He can in AEW, already is, but he can definitely go to WWE and make himself a huge effing star if he wants to. And I think this showed it. He needed this, and I'm looking forward to see what happens after this. I think his star has grown more from this, and I think even like the Danielson Iron Man match, the Moxley feud, anything like that. Obviously there was the Punk feud, which elevated him. I think this is doing the work and then some because of all the character work he said to do. It's really, really solid, and looking forward to seeing what's going on next. So recent weeks have had both men teasing that despite their friendship, they can't trust each other. While it was assumed MJF would be the one to eventually turn on Cole, the growing feeling is that it could be Cole who does the turn instead and goes heel in the process. Adding some additional spices, the sulking ex-BFF of Cole, Roderick Strong, and the Kingdom, of course, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. Strong is teased being disgusted with Cole's MJF friendship, with the Kingdom doing all they can to add to those feelings. Could they align with Cole and reform their Ring of Honor faction, or could they align with MJF in another swerve? The possibilities are endless, but I think the end result of Sunday will lead into a rematch at All Out, and Cole leaves Wembley as the AEW World Champion with a new group to support him. Your winner and new champion, my prediction, Adam Cole. Of course, it's not the only show, and not the only match, rather. These two are going to be in Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions Aussie Open defend against MJF and Cole. Dear reader, dear listener, Cole and MJF won't just be in one match, but two, as they'll challenge Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions Aussie Open, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, of course, on the pre-show. Does Cole and MJF going to the main event as Tag Team Champions really help? Not really, which is why something here will add to the main event recipe AEW is cooking up. Perhaps an injury to either guy that gives either man pause about taking advantage of the other during their singles match, winner and still champions, Aussie Open. I ask you, can you picture MJF and Adam Cole working Ring of Honor tapings on Saturdays? I don't. I'm working on Ring of Honor TV weekly for 15,000 viewers or something like that. I don't think it's going to happen. So I think Aussie Open is going to win, but something here is going to lead towards some sort of, someone is going to get like pretend hurt, and it's going to lead into the main event. I don't know why, but there's something here, but Aussie Open is going to win. And it's going to have a direct link to the main event. Something we'll stew on for the entire show, put it that way. CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. This is for Punk's quote-unquote real world title, one he claims he never lost after he was stripped of it last September due to torn left triceps and that little brawl he had following his Scorched Earth post all-out press conference comments. Of course, you guys know all about that. Here, he'll take on Samoa Joe for the second time in AEW in a rematch from their recent Owen Hart Cup tournament. Joe attacked Punk from behind during a recent AEW Trios title opportunity. Of course, that was him and FTR against the House of Black, as he was in pursuit, that being Joe, of the rematch that Punk initially ignored. Punk then answered a challenge last Saturday by tricking Joe in a match and laying him out after revealing eventually it was him under a mask as the Golden Vampire, I believe, was something along those lines. The issue here is that I really had to think about how this rematch came to be, as this doesn't have that real emotional hook other current feuds have. Punk's return has been entertaining, but scattered in terms of targets, as he's feuded with Ricky Starks and kind of, sort of, Jay White since returning in June. I'm looking forward to this, but not as much as, say, a match against the Elite, which I don't think we're ever going to see at this point, unfortunately. So, yeah, I think Punk is going to win this. Just like I said, this does not have that hook to me. I think if you're, like, a hardcore Ring of Honor fan, I can understand why you may be looking forward to this. It's kind of the most recent battle in their lineage, but in terms of like stakes, it's going to be a good match. It should be physical, but I just, it doesn't feel big enough to me for whatever reason. The whole real world title thing hasn't really kind of done much for me either, because MJF hasn't really acknowledged it. So there's no like heat there, so to speak. So I don't know, perhaps that will heat up a little bit, but I'm not really feeling this yet. And it'll be a good match. And I think the whole show, and that's kind of when I'm in these criticisms, I'm just kind of telling you, and I kind of wrote in this column that the show's going to be really, really good. I'm just, in terms of like that emotional hook I'm kind of looking for going into this, it's not really there. Chris Jericho versus Will Ospreay. Oh boy, here we go. It's another one that had some fans less than excited. They expected Ospreay to finish his trilogy with Kenny Omega in front of a massive audience. I've read the sentiment this feud is one born in New Japan Pro Wrestling and should end there. Of course, I understand that sentiment, but I think exceptions can be made and should be one made here. There's also the rumor that Omega versus Bryan Danielson 2 was tapped for Wembley before Danielson broke his forearm at June's Forbidden Door. Of course, that would have made a lot of sense. Jericho apparently is hearing the grumbles as well. So he's been active on X, the former Twitter, playing up the hate, and he referred to it during his Spirited Dynamite promo on Wednesday. While I appreciate and admire how Jericho has made so many pivots at the right time in his long career, I don't really care about seeing him against Ospreay. His run this year reads like I still can do this at a high-level bucket list on the road to an eventual retirement. I do believe that. Both guys are going to bring it Sunday, and the environment should help this be even bigger. If there were odds for what match kicks off the pay-per-view, I'd put some money on this. I think Will Ospreay will obviously win this. I thought the promo on Wednesday was good, but I'm not into this version of Jericho. They cut that line out? I guess they did. I put this in the column. Yeah, it's gone. So, I'm not into this version for whatever reason. It just doesn't. It's just not doing it for me for whatever reason. It's just not. So, I'm less than excited about this. I'm sure it'll be a fine match, but the kind of lead into a point I'm going to make down the road, but in this column. But I'm not really feeling this match for whatever reason, and we'll talk about that in a minute. AEW Tag Team Champions. FTR, Dax Harwood, and Cash Wheeler defending against the Young Bucks, of course the Jacksons. This should and will be a great match. Yes, all caps. These are two of the best teams in the game in the trilogy match of a series that has lasted a few years. While Khan's slow trip approach to booking matches, especially rematches, is sometimes a bit of a head scratcher, it worked in this case. Due to Cash Wheeler's arrest last week, this briefly was in jeopardy, but all systems seem to be a go as of this writing. This is another reason AEW needs a domestic streaming service, as the only way to watch FTR and the Bucks' first two encounters is either if you have them saved on your DVR, bought them on pay-per-view to go back and watch, or by more nefarious means. You know what that means. I expect all four men to rise up to the moment and put on a top five match of the year. Whoever goes over in the end will be an interesting decision, but I feel like it's time for the Bucks to make a real run again as champions. That's why I think the winner of new champions after this is going to be the Young Bucks. And I don't need to say anything more about this match because I think it's going to be everything and then some. I wish there was an easy way to watch the first two matches. I will say that. And there should be. Either they should put them out for free on YouTube or something along those lines. But they've done a lot of work with putting together the video packages for Cole and MJF. I wish they would just put the matches for free on YouTube. I think that'd make a lot of sense and get fans even more excited. People that haven't seen maybe the first one or the second one or something like that. I think that that's a disservice to not do that. And they need this streaming service like yesterday. And that leads us to the Golden Elite versus Bullet Club Gold and Konosuke Takeshita. As I take another sip. I must admit that I'm not, or nor ever have been, a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, simply due to just not having enough time to commit to watching regularly. That's completely true. This match feels more like a nod to New Japan, which is probably why it's not hitting with me. I am the belief that Omega, of course Omega, Ibushi, and Hangman Page in this match, representing the Golden Elite, I am of the belief Omega should have been a major singles match on the show. While the Danielson bout didn't work the injury, either Ospreay or the much-anticipated Takeshita match should have been the call here. Omega and the Wembley fans deserve that moment. That's another bold point. This show, you have 80,000 people. Give me Kenny Omega singles match. You just do it. That's not to say this is a bad match, but it feels like a Dynamite Collision main event. Page has been backburner for far too long, and Ibushi looked less than great in his return match at last month's Blood and Guts. Conversely, White and Robinson hit a new level over on Collision, while Takeshi has really fit in his new heel persona. The bigger match out of this combo is coming a week after All In, but it should have been on this show, and that's going to be, to me, that's Omega and Takeshi. I'm pretty certain that has to be at All Out. it should have been on this show, and maybe just flip these and do this, the trios next week. Again, you have 80,000 people. You got to give them something like a big, big, big stuff all up and down. It's one of the frustrations fans and myself have, but Bull Cup Gold and Takeshi is going to win this. And that's going to set up the all out match on next Sunday. And to go back to the you know, the Page thing, he just, I don't know. He's former AEW world champion. He's like in the mix, but they need something kind of like interesting for him this next 4 months of the year, and to get him kind of back up on that level again. I don't know. I'm just not feeling what they're doing with him right now. And I don't know if they don't have a plan, but I don't know. This does not feel like a big enough match for me. And I think they're kind of missing it a little bit. You have the, of course, AEW Women's Champion Hikaru Shida defending against Toni Storm, Britt Baker, and Saraya. Like I said, Khan loves his traditions, hence another four-way for the women's title. The pall cast over this match is the lack of the aforementioned Hater, who is to be gutted not be able to take part. Lisa Loco and Saraya, the former Page in WWE, will get to have a well-deserved moment on a huge stage after so many years of thinking she wouldn't have that opportunity again due to injury. The Shida victory over Storm was a surprising one, but I don't feel like she's meant to be a transitional champion. I think we see some major dissension between the Outcast members Storm and Saraya in the end. Shida retains the title as a result. I wouldn't be surprised to see Hater here in some form or fashion to aid Baker, who I'm struggling to figure out where she fits in everything in AEW. Winner and still champion, Hikaru Shida. And yeah, I would stick by all that stuff. I think obviously, you know, Hater, this is a, I think they're doing kind of the best they can. Hater was, you know, should have been in this match, but she can't. Baker, I think I don't think it's her fault. I just think they don't seem to really have an idea, a plan for what they want her to do. And I think kind of this Outcast feud, I with Baker and her group, somewhat her group, I think it needs a kind of finale. It never really had a big boss kind of ending of like two leaders of two factions going head to head. And it's kind of just been this ongoing thing. So I don't know. We'll see. But there's they have not presented her in a way that's really kind of building momentum anywhere. So she could win here and maybe start that again, but I don't know. I'm not seeing. I think Sheeta's going to win this match. Or, you know, something I thought of just now, Baker could win, and that builds towards a eventual big match with Hater, and like, I don't know when she's going to be back, but you know, that could be the case as well. That's actually, I kind of like that idea better now. So I'll put a pin in that. Stadium Stampede, of course, Eddie Kingston, Penta, Orange Cassidy, and Best Friends taking on the Blackpool Combat Club, Moxley, Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta, and Santana and Ortiz. The lineup was changed due to what was believed to be a visa issue for Rey Fénix. Now it's a 5-on-5 brawl with returning Santana Ortiz on the side of the BCC. And yeah, Ortiz was supposed to be a Limitless Wrestling show on Saturday that I'm going live to see. He will not be there, of course. Found out very late last week. The real-life Santana Ortiz drama due to having some sort of falling out is an intriguing one, but that discussion will have to be shelved for another day. Yeah, where are these two at? You know, where is Mike Santana at mentally with AEW? There was talk he was going to leave before he got injured. There's issues. So what's going on there? I want to hear more about that in the future. This is going to be a much different Stampede match from previous installments, given they are soon to be doing this live versus a tape version. Every such bout has featured wild stunts, combatants fighting all over the stadium without fans getting away. That also allows for post-match editing, which helps enrich things for the viewer and also helps the presentation. I'm very fascinated by that. And is it just going to be a big brawl all over the place? How are they going to do this where again, the fans don't get in the way? And remember, those Stadium Stampedes, like I just mentioned, they have the beauty of editing, and they can fix stuff and cut to different things and do all that, make it a real presentation. I'm wondering how that's going to work here, especially with that many people in the building. So fascinating on the production side to see. In the end, it's going to be a fun brawl that the late Terry Funk will be entertained by, and one that will set up a few matches for All Out. Your winners are Team BCC. I wouldn't be surprised to see another Eddie Castagnoli match next week, a Kingston Cassidy match for the international title that will end Cassidy's reign. So yeah, I think that there's going to be a few of these, few matches spin out of this. All right, three more to go here. Coffin match, Sting and Darby Allin versus Swerve Strickland and Christian Cage. This lineup was adjusted Wednesday after Strickly oddly decided to quote unquote fire Fox from his group just a few weeks after bringing him in as part of a whole storyline involving Allin and Nick Wayne. I think it happened 2 weeks ago. The way it was presented likely means Fox couldn't travel to London. Otherwise, it's nonsensical. If you remember, Brian Alvarez actually mentioned on Observer Radio after this was submitted that he could not go and found out very late in the game, which was not seen very favorably. That is what Brian Alvarez said. I think he would know, given he knows these guys in Pacific Northwest. So we'll see what happens with AR Fox. But there's a story I could tell based on another promoter I've talked to, but I'll save that for another time. I'll enter the always entertained Cage, who will undoubtedly rile up the locals in a delightful way. The stage is primed for another big Sting moment, and likely one that'll have us covering our eyes in the hopes he is okay afterward. This will be a lot of fun. I have no doubt about that. Your winner in the coffin match, Sting and Allen. I assume Christian Cage will have the door, the casket shut on him, the casket door. And this will be a lot of fun, and that's a very, very, very great thing. It'll be good. I'm a huge Swerve Strickland guy, and I'm hoping this kind of elevates him a little bit. I assume he's not going to take the loss, but it's time to get him in that upper title mix, and I'm hoping that happens in the next 4 months. AEW Trios Champions, the House of Black, Malakai Black, Buddy Matthews, and Brody King defending against the Acclaimed, of course, Max Caster, Anthony Bowens, and Billy Gunn. This was added Wednesday night. It's a vehicle for Gunn to either have a final coronating moment in winning a title or for him to officially retire in front of 80,000 fans. Given that the House of Black has been so abusive towards the popular Acclaimed Gunn over the past few months, this feels like a spot for the feel-good moment of the night. Again, I think the Sting match is going to be a feel-good moment. I think this is going to be perhaps even more so. This actually could open the show as well, and I think the Acclaimed and Guns are going to be your new Trios champions after this, and the people are going to go crazy. So I think it's going to be a good feel-good moment for Billy Gunn, a nice career coronation, even if he doesn't retire after this. Finally, FTW champion Jack Perry defending against Hook. Another late addition. This takes place on the pre-show. Perry is too early in his heel run to lose the ceremonial title back to Hook, but he's going to win in a way that will give Hook a reason to challenge Perry to a stipulation match at All Out. That's my prediction. Your winner and still champion, Jack Perry. And I don't have many thoughts about this, given I just wrote a single short paragraph about it. But I think it'll be fun. Fine. And short, probably 8 minutes or so. And Hook, he's 30 matches in a career, maybe less, and he's going to be working in front of 80,000 people. Boy, good luck, kid. I mean, all these people, veterans, I'm sure, even nervous. I can't imagine doing that. Of course, Perry is going to be the biggest crowd he's ever worked for in front of. And yeah, so I assume this will be the second match on the pre-show. But I think everyone has their work cut out for them. I think, again, it's going to be a very entertaining show. Of course, 1 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. The pre-show starts at noontime, and we'll have live coverage here. But yeah, it's I guess we'll reserve full judgment until we see what the lineup will be for All Out. It's going to be a very busy week as they build towards this pay-per-view with 7 days notice. They only have two matches announced as of now. And yeah, I guess we'll kind of see what happens. My prediction for some of the All Out matches, as I mentioned, I think we're going to get a Perry Hook rematch and I wouldn't be surprised if we see several rematches. Not too many, because Khan doesn't like to do that, but again, I can definitely see a few just to kind of make it easier. But I think, Perry Hook stipulation match, I could see a Trios title match if there's some sort of, if there is a title change, I could see that. Sting and Darby, well, Darby Allin is, of course, challenging for the TNT title. And let's see what else you could do. Sting has done too many singles matches. Stadium Stampede, as I mentioned, the two matches there, I think it'd kind of come out of this at least. I think you could do a Kingston Cassinoli, and you could do, I think the Orange Cassidy Moxley title matches is basically confirmed. In my head it is. And I wouldn't be surprised to maybe see Santana Ortiz, best friends on Dynamite or something like that. We'll see what happens with the title match, if that's going to be disputed or not. And yeah, I could see. Yeah, if the Sheeta thing happens, she could take on one of these women in the rematch. If my thought, which I'm now thinking is the Britt Baker wins thanks to Hayter, and then that starts a long term story between those two for a feud. I could see them doing a Baker Sheeta rematch on next Sunday. Omega Takeshita, I think, is going to happen. I don't know. For Paige and Bullet Club Glow, you could do a Paige Jay White match. That could be a lot of fun. The tag team titles, that's really, I don't see them running back a fourth one, but you could do the Bucks against Bullet Club Gold if you didn't want to do the Paige Jay White match. So there's an option there. Jericho Wallace, I don't see anything there. Punk, boy, what does Punk do? I mean, you could do a Punk Jay White. I'm just, actually, the Ricky Starks thing seems to make sense. But again, he's kind of like half in, half out feuding with teams. So it's tough to really kind of see a straight line there. And then, of course, I think it's going to be MJF Cole rematch, given that Cole, I think, is going to win the title on Sunday. So yeah, lots of intrigue, lots of, it's going to be a spectacle, and that's obviously awesome. It is fun to see that many people there. WrestleMania's, despite what you may think about WWE, WrestleMania's and those stadium shows are always fun. The spectacle of it, how they're going to set this up, is AEW's first run at it. I certainly don't think it's going to be a technical disaster. I think having a guy like Mike Mansoori that they hired this year from WWE is a huge reason why that's not going to happen, that experience level. I think they know what they're doing. I'm really intrigued to see the set. This is going to be, it's going to be fun. I have a smile on my face because I love these type of events like this and small companies being given the opportunity to take big swings. And this is good for the business. And again, the most ardent WWE haters, if they were, if you were to talk to them on the street and say, this is not going to go on social media, what do you think? They say that that's pretty good that they were able to do is 80,000 people over $10 million before they even sold a single effing pay-per-view. That is in a t-shirt. That's going to be good. It's good for the business. It's good for the business. So with all that, I'm going to let you guys go. Enjoy the show on Sunday. And again, I'm recording this on Friday afternoon, so something could change the lineup before then. Who knows? But yeah, RIP Terry Funk, Bray Wyatt. And check out some of their matches. Plenty of stuff out there in the archives. And that's it. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.